Who's ready for more Raised by Wolves analysis? I know you are. In the first episode, which you better listen to if you haven't listened to it yet. In the first episode, we talked about the Illuminate confirmed of Ridley Scott, the origins of Rome, because it's very important to the story. We talked about the characters, Team Android versus Team Mithraic Cult, some of the ideas behind the intro song, the penis helmets, atheism as the only path to progress, the camps being established, mother stealing the kids off the ark, and all that stuff. Well, the first four episodes were covered, and now we're going to cover the Cult of Mithras. We're going to take a short detour before we cover the rest of the episodes, because you need to know. I figured that this was a good spot to interject this, and this is going to blow your mind. In the words of the great Sam Tripoli, dude, you just blew my mind, because this is what it's all about. It's what the show's all about. It's in the name. They're not making it up. So who is Mithra? What is the Cult of Mithra? Well, you gotta go back, because we always talk about the secret doctrine, the mystery religions, the esoteric, the hidden wisdom. And this is one of the components of that. This is the cult of the mystery religion in Rome. We talked about the origins of Rome, so you're already familiar. But this cult in Rome, they worship the sun, and that's where that phrase Sol Invictus, you may have seen the phrase. It's where it was used. Derived from Zoroastrianism, which is over there in Persia, modern-day Iran, Middle East area. Sol Invictus means the invincible sun, and that's what this cult of Mithra worshipped. Because you got to understand Rome at the time. Like I said, I'm now a self-professed expert on Rome. Watched the whole show on it. And Rome, it was a hodgepodge of different religions. For, you know, depending on which period you look at, I guess. But they had lots of gods, lots of, you know, which is your definition of paganism, many gods. So any new god they would find along the way when they were empire building or whatnot, they would just toss it in the mix. They didn't discriminate. They were like, yeah, join the pantheon. Let's get it. So the people, the population, they were able to pick and choose what they wanted to worship. So when some of them, you know, broke off and started this cult of Mithras, it wasn't really that radical of an idea. Because that's what this culture was like. It was just like, have it your way, right? Whichever god you like, you can keep your gods. Choose your gods. You can keep your gods. Whichever one you want. They had, in this cult of Mithras, it has all the makings of a great secret society. They had degrees of initiation. They had secret handshakes, which I would argue on purpose sounds very much like Freemasonry. And again, we'll cover the connections of that later. They also had a vow of silence, as you see with any great secret society. You had these underground temples where they would do their worship, which is much like, you know, and we talked about this with my Alice in Wonderland expose, which is available if you're new to the crew here. Alice in Rocky Horror Land is a compilation book I wrote, Amazon Audible. You can get it under my author name, Isaac Weishaupt. But we talked about Alice in Wonderland because it's an initiation tale, and Alice has to go underground to become initiated, which is a theme you see oftentimes in works of entertainment. You see it in Deadpool, right? But they, at the time, the cult of Mithra, they were in competition with Christianity until Christ, of course, won. So they had to go underground further, quite literally. And we'll also talk about how they could have actually been the predecessors to the Knights Templar, which is the free, which blends into the Freemasonry stuff. But the argument, the idea is that there was this god Mithras. And Mithras could have been born on December 25th, that's what they argue. Which also is when Rome was celebrating Saturnalia, which is during the same exact time of Christmas, obviously, December 25th. because they were doing a lot of sun god worship stuff. And if you follow the procession of the equinox and the sun and the traveling and down to the what do you call it, when it gets down to the bottom 3 degrees and it stops there before it reascends, Southern Cross, I couldn't think of the term. It's when the sun goes down to its lowest point for 3 days before the birthday of the unconquered sun starts going, making its way back to, you know, equinox and then the solstice of the summer and all that. It's called the, God, I lost it again. Can you believe that? The Southern Cross. See, and you know what's messing me up is I'm picturing that old 70s song. And when I picture it, I picture that guy with the walrus mustache. It's a Simon and Garfunkel. Oh boy. That was a peek into my crazy brain that you probably didn't want. Anyhow, you get what I'm saying. So the cult of Mithras could have been part of this whole idea of Saturnalia and the sun god worship, because they worship the sun. Because this religion, they mainly focused on the god Mithras, who is depicted as slaying the bull and then feasting with the sun, the god they call Sol, which is again the same as you see in the tale Raised by Wolves. It's the Latin term for sun, the Latino heat, like your boy Eddie Guerrero, rest in peace. But he was also born from a rock. That's the mythology of Mithras. He was born from a rock, and curiously enough, Raised by Wolves has this large black rock with the heat coming out of it, like there's the power of the sun god inside of it almost. Now, Mithras is depicted wearing the red Phrygian hat. It's like a floppy red cap you see on like garden gnomes. Which is also, the Phrygian hat is also, I'm probably saying that way wrong. So I'm very sorry for you smart people, way smarter than me out there. But it's also the symbol for liberty and freedom, which you see on Old Mother Liberty, the goddess of America, aka Columbia. She's wearing the Phrygian hat. It represents the freedom from the slaves. Now, what's curious is that the Phrygian cap represents the consort of Cybele, and that consort's name is Attis. Because Phrygia, you have to understand, is an area in where modern day Turkey is, where this goddess Cybele was from. Now, this is important because the Cybele and her consort, Attis, were the predecessor to Mithras. And, oh, by the way, they also hated Christianity, too. Because there was this baptism Eucharist-type deal and a Holy Week in this cult of Cybele. So they think, like you saw in the Zeitgeist show, Christianity literally stole the mystery religion and perverted it. Now, this mother goddess of Cybele was important in Rome, too. There was a temple dedicated to her on Palatine Hill. I don't know how you pronounce that. Because there was two major areas. There was Capitoline Hill and Palatine Hill near the Tigris River. Is it Tigris? Yeah. Anyway. We talked about that in the first episode with Rome. Now, there's also a symbol we need to talk about with the lion-headed man with serpents wrapped around him with a caduceus nearby, and he's holding two keys, and oh boy, what does all that mean? Well, it's curious, because there's some confusion as to what this figure actually represents. Some say it represents Kronos, which is your Saturn reference. Some say it's the Gnostic Demiurge. This is the lion-headed demonic forces that created the simulation world that we're stuck in, that we're imprisoned in. Some say it's a reference to a degree of initiation, the lion, the Leo. Now, ironically, in the cult of Mithras, the first degree of initiation actually has the raven or the crow as the awakening of the candidate. Again, an alchemical symbol of the negredo, the blackening, the first degree of initiation, which, oh, by the way, is Scott Free Productions' logo, is the crow, the black bird. And on this imagery-laden symbol, we also have the caduceus, which we talk about with the Baphomet all the time. And this goes back to Mesopotamia, but it symbolizes Hermes or Mercury, which is the archetype for the messenger of the gods, which I would argue the messenger of the gods will be what the alien religion will be all about. It also symbolizes the philosopher's stone in alchemical terms, because the snakes of wisdom are the feminine and the masculine principles intertwined, wrapping around one another, wrapping around the pole. It's kind of like when we talked about the Kundalini stuff. We talked about the Kundalini, the energy trapped up inside a man. And we talked about this, if you listen to my film analysis for The Witch or The Lighthouse, because I argued that those two were complementary films of one another. Pretty good analysis, if I don't mind saying so myself. But the Baphomet also has the Caduceus symbol on it, because it symbolizes the reconciliation of opposites, which gets you into the topic of duality. Carl Jung, he said the good and evil evolved into two equal balanced principles that belong together. The dark side of human nature needs to be integrated into the whole, into wholeness. That's why Jung said, I'd rather be whole than good, because the being of an entity that's whole fulfills the Gnostic reconciliation. A lot of weird kind of concepts here, but it's worth covering. Now, this weird lion-headed man with the serpents wrapped around holding the keys. The keys are symbolic for the unlocking of universal wisdom. The universal wisdom is the Luciferian wisdom. And I'm going to read to you from Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages, because it has a good passage and it touches on a lot of the topics we'll be speaking about. And in this, you know, try not to zone out. You'll hear talk about the keys of the secret doctrines and all that. So anyway, here we go. Let's go into it. It says, Thoth Hermes Trismegistus, which also, by the way, is a rap line by Pharrell Williams. He raps about Hermes Trismegistus. He's Illuminate confirmed. Anyway, back to the paragraph. Thoth Hermes Trismegistus, the founder of Egyptian learning, the wise man of the ancient world, gave to the priests and philosophers of antiquity the secrets which have been preserved to this day in myth and legend. These allegories and emblematic figures conceal the secret formula for spiritual, mental, moral, and physical regeneration, commonly known as the mystic chemistry of the soul, alchemy. These sublime truths were communicated to the initiates of the mystery schools, but were concealed from the profane. That's you. That's the idiots. That's the mouth breathers. That's all of us. That's how they look at us. We're just idiots. Automatons meant to be manipulated and controlled and steered according to their will to give them the tools they need to break away from the earth. It's for them to become gods. Let me keep reading. The latter, that's us, unable to understand the abstract philosophical tenets, worshipped the concrete sculptured idols which were emblematic of these secret truths. The wisdom and secrecy of Egypt are epitomized in the Sphinx, which has preserved its secret from the seekers of 100 generations. The mysteries of Hermeticism, the great spiritual truths hidden from the world by the ignorance of the world, and the keys of the secret doctrines. The keys of the secret doctrines of the ancient philosophers are all symbolized by the Virgin Isis. Veiled from head to foot, she reveals her wisdom only to the tried and initiated few who have earned the right to enter her sacred presence. Tear from the veiled figure of nature its shroud of obscurity and stand face to face with the divine reality. Talking about the divine, that's the God, that's the light source, that's the sun behind the sun, that's soul. In the Raised by Wolves tale. Now, Mithraism? Oh boy, how do you say it? The cult of Mithraism, it's also a left-hand path religion. I'm going to read you another passage from the Lords of the Left-Hand Path, because it's a book that's got so many references to so many things. It's one of my go-to books. A close study of Mithraism reveals that it is a sophisticated system developed from the religion of the warrior bands, hyenas, of early Iranian culture. That's the Zoroastrianism stuff we talked about earlier, okay? Iranians, the Persians, you know what I'm saying. This is often eclectically mixed with elements from religions and mystery cults with which the Mithraists came into contact. When the Romans came into contact with this cult after the middle of the 1st century CE, it spread among soldiers throughout the Roman Empire. In contrast to other common forms of Iranian religion, Mithraism is remarkably free of dualistic thinking. Mithras, who is in some respects resembled another culture hero who was born on December 25th, achieved salvation through the sacrifice of a bull. Eventually, this bull sacrifice cult lost out to the human sacrifice cult of Christianity. Wow! This guy really hates the Christians. From the standpoint of Orthodox Zoroastrian religion, both Zoroastrianism and Mithraism represent heretical, evil paths to darkness, which is what I'm arguing, essentially, because I'm in Camp Christ. I ain't going to apologize for it either. But okay, so both Zoroastrianism and Mithraism represent heretical, evil paths of darkness. Zoroastrianism because it sees Ormazd as a subordinate to Zervan, and Ahriman as the complete equal of Ormazd, because it reduces the material universe to the creation of an evil god. Mithraism because it revolves around the worship of one of the old gods, the Devas, a.k.a. Mithras. What is more, he is worshipped at night, which in itself constitutes an evil act of devil worship among Orthodox Zoroastrians, and he is a warrior god who sacrifices a cosmic bull to create the world, which is reminiscent of the sacrificial cult of the old Iranian warrior cults, the hyenas. Followers of Mithras take part in that sacrifice, thus becoming creators themselves. Let's take a moment to appreciate what I do for you here. Reading all this nonsense. I really enjoy it. I kid you a little bit. But yeah, it's hard to follow a lot of this stuff. Like, I don't have this secret knowledge that you guys don't. This is very confusing stuff. But, so, if you go to another website, because I was trying to make sense of all this, and I'm like, what in the hell are they talking about? There's a website, carnaval.com, and they've got a thing on Mithras. It says, basically, they're saying that the conspiracy world has floated the idea that Mithraism went underground, popped up later as Freemasonry, and or the Knights Templar. And this makes sense, because Mithras is always depicted killing the bull, which is symbolic of the end of the astrological age of Taurus. Because if you follow the astrological progression, you had the age of Taurus, which was the bull. Then you had the Age of Pisces, which was the fish. Then you had the Age of Aquarius, which is water. And of course, the bull-worshipping idol worshippers of the Old Testament, they gave way to the worshippers of Christ, which is why the Christians are depicted with the fish in the Age of Pisces. And that's why the hippies are the Age of Aquarius, because we're moving on to the next thing. And the theory is that Mithras will return to kill the fish, kill Pisces, kill Christianity, and instill the Age of Aquarius. That's what they believe, essentially. Now, let's talk about Tracy Twyman. For those of you who don't know who she is, she's a very intelligent researcher who delved deep into the darkness. She passed away recently. Rest in peace, Tracy Twyman. I tried to get her on my show a couple times. We couldn't iron out dates. I wish I would have tried a little harder now. But she's got a lot of great interviews out there online you can find. She was on Greg Carwood's Higher Side Chats a bunch too, so check her out. But anyway, she actually put this on my radar. When I first heard of the Mithraic cult, I remembered, because I read her book, Clock Shavings. And in it, she said that Mithras is equivalent on some levels to the Baphomet, and is in fact similar, if not part, of Freemasonry. And I dug through the literature, and I'm going to read you from her work, from Clock Shavings, and this is a section called The Practice of Baphometic Magic Father Mithras, the God of Contracts. Quote, Baphomet, the outer head of the Ordo Lapsit Exilis, is, as I have explained, the name of the eternal ancestral spirit of Cain, the lord of the earth and the son of the sun. He has been known by many names throughout the centuries, and one of them is Mithras. In fact, Baphomet has been interpreted by some to translate to the words Father Mithras. Originally a Persian deity, Mithras came to be worshipped throughout the ancient world. His greatest act was to be sacrificed in exchange for the eternal salvation of mankind. Mithras was known as the god of contracts. He was the mediator between the Persian Ahura Mazda, which is their god, and Ahriman, which is their devil. Indeed, Mithras' name actually means contract. Mithraists viewed their patron as the inventor of all laws and justice. He was believed to punish severely anyone who broke a contract. The handshake, which signifies both meeting on the square and agreement over a contract, began with the rites of Mithras. There it was used to symbolize the covenant of faith and trust that was believed to exist between Mithras and those who served him. His name is undoubtedly related to the Egyptian mat, meaning truth, fairness, and wisdom. In many ways, the rites of Freemasonry resemble the rites of Mithras. Masonic ritual focuses heavily on the importance of honoring one's faith and creating trust between the membership. This is fitting, for it is Father Mithras, or Baphomet, who was ultimately responsible for the creation of Freemasonry. Like I said, she was deep into the research, much deeper than I've ever gone into the cult of Mithras. I gotta believe her. So there you have some weird connections to the Baphomet, some connections to Freemasonry, even some connections to Christianity, if you want to go that route with it. So I went a little deeper into Tracy Twyman on this journey, and she was on Higher Side Chats talking about this in 2017, when she was talking about a novel she wrote called Genuflect. It's a novel that she says was mixed with fact and fiction. I believe she blurred the line because it was too accurate, right? Too on the money. And it was based on similar ideas. She said that Michael Bloomberg bought some land in London where they dug up the temple to Mithras, and he proceeded to build a big Bloomberg headquarters with a new temple on it. They call it the London Mithraeum because that's the name of the underground meeting locations that we talked about earlier where they do rituals. They found several of them in Europe. They found several in the UK, one in Germany. Now, what was curious to me was that I heard a different show where she, and I don't know the reference. I wish I had a link for you. I should have wrote it down. But I remember clearly that she said that she implied that Bloomberg was having her followed before her death. So, I mean, there's that too, right? But Bloomberg, he did in fact build his European headquarters on these grounds that she's talking about at the location of the Walbrook River, and there's a museum of the rebuilt Mithraic temple, the Mithraeum, as it were. So all the stuff she was talking about was true. Then she said that there's a claim that London is the place where Kronos was actually buried. And I bought her book, Genuflect, because I wanted to look this up. Because that was very curious to me. Because Kronos, of course, represents Saturn and the god of sacrifice, right? You sacrifice to Moloch, much like you sacrifice the kids to Saturn. I'm going to read you from the book. It says, "It is my belief that the Trinacria was possessed by the spirit of Kronos slash Saturn. Plutarch wrote that the former king of the Golden Age was buried..." That's Saturn, okay? "The former king of the Golden Age was buried somewhere beneath the British Isles in a death-like sleep, in a tomb that is also his prison. He was kept alive by birds who brought him ambrosia to eat as he slept. And with his dreams, he communicated to his followers on the surface of the earth. I think Rosenberg was one such follower." And that those, and Rosenberg, by the way, is her fictionalized version of Bloomberg. "I think Rosenberg was one such follower, and that those ravens in the Tower of London were the ones feeding Kronos somehow. When Rosenberg had them killed, it released his spirit into the body of a waiting golem that Rosenberg had prepared." Okay. Now, this is important to talk about because we always harp on the symbolism of Saturn. We also previously talked about trying to resurrect the spirit of Osiris into the standing president. So it's a curious idea because Bloomberg was running for president. Now, another little bonus curiosity is that in the genuflect novel, Twyman mentions the Foundation Stone, something we talked about as the jewel from Lucifer's crown in the same episode of the QAnon Raising Osiris ritual. And she says that William Blake wrote about the Foundation Stone in the Dome of the Rock, where the Knights Templar consider to be their official headquarters, which is true. And this stone has the imprisoned soul of Kronos in it. So lots of very strange connections to be made here with this jewel from Lucifer's crown and the Knights Templar and the cult of Mithras. They all seem connected. Now, Kronos, he fits into this because Mithras was supposed to be very similar. If you read The Golden Bough by James Frazer, it asserts that Mithras was incarnated through an agricultural corn spirit ritual. And Saturn or Kronos is symbolized with the scythe, like the Grim Reaper. And it represents the reaping of the corn. It's agriculture. In Genuflect, Tracy Twyman says that Mithras was a form of Saturn based on images of Mithras reaping corn stalks from the rectum of the sacrificial bull found in one of the Mithraeums. Kronos, again, the Saturnian god, would consume babies in fear that one of them would take his place as king of the gods. Reaping the corn is kind of the analogy for that. Now, Tracy describes the cult of Mithras as a solar religion. Again, makes sense, right? I'll read you from her book again. And this will all make sense here. We're going to wrap this up here in a little bit. I know this is getting a little strange for you. But hang in there. It's going to be worth it. Okay, from her book, she says, "The worshippers of Sol Invictus, like the Egyptians, saw the sun as the ultimate symbol of an omnipotent god. But in the Mithraic mysteries, which attempted to incorporate this cult in its later years, the initiate made a symbolic journey through each of the heavens, in imitation of this enhanced story of the adventures of Mithras. This did not merely involve him passing through the various gates of heaven with special passwords. This, taught by Gnostic and Hermetic schools, is necessary for the soul to ascend to the highest realm after death. Rather, in this case, it seems that Mithras actually conquered the intelligence that ruled over the spheres, subduing them to his will. After slaying the bull from which the material world was made, he ascended this stairway to heaven, the ladder of lights we know as the seven classical planets, until he got to Sol's kingdom. There, after the sun was overthrown, the luminary was forced to bow down on one knee to its new master, Mithras." Do you see the parallels here? The Mithraic cult goes out to the Kepler 22b. They're trying to ascend. They're trying to pull down the planets to get past the fake god to get to the true god. The sun behind the sun. All right, let's continue. So the sun and Mithras meet up. The two then shake hands as friends and then feasted together on the bull with the domination of the new sun god now having been established. Then Mithras took the reins of the sun's chariot, ascended to the next realm, which was that of Saturn. Mithras then took on his own identity as well, indicating that he overtook that god like he did the others, and henceforth ruled all the kingdoms below. So Mithras is both Saturn and the sun, I thought to myself. But I've read that Saturn is associated in alchemical symbolism with the process of putrefaction called the Negredo. This is when the primal material of the universe is sacrificed and dismembered. And the sign of the Negredo is a black sun. They say the sun is somehow in the center of the earth, just like Kronos, who is Saturn, is imprisoned in Tartarus by Zeus, who is Jupiter. Ay, ay, ay. So the black sun is the Negredo again. The Scott Free Productions logo is the black crow. Same idea. And in the storyline, you see the big black Pentagon cube thing, which is symbolic of Saturn. That is Sol. That is the solar god. So Twyman finds out that Mithras overtook the sun and Saturn, took on both their roles, and was now above and beyond the universe. It is now the sun behind the sun. That's verbatim from her book. But we also know that the sun behind the sun is Sirius, which is the Freemason blazing star, which is just like what you see on the outfits of the Mithraic cult. So what are we doing? Okay, let's back up. What's happening here? What's the end game for these occultists? I'll tell you what it is. It's opening up the portals, shattering simulated reality, escaping our prison planet, becoming the breakaway civilization out there in the cosmos, unleashing the power of the hidden sun, which is much better and brighter than our fake sun. And Twyman asserts this is all the story of the chemical wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz, unlocking the sun 7 times brighter than ours. Which is what you'll read about if you read Arthur C. Clarke's sequel to 2001 A Space Odyssey, 2010. They unlock the power of a new sun, a brighter sun, and guess what its name is? I'll give you a minute. We got all day. It's Lucifer, okay? These occultists, they can't help themselves. They get so rock hard for this Luciferian sun behind the sun stuff. And I'm here to reveal the truth, okay? So let's do a little mini wrap up just to catch you up. In case you were zoning out, you were probably driving around and you were like, this dude's lost his damn mind. Let's wrap it up, a mini wrap up. We're not done yet though. Don't go anywhere. Mini wrap up is that Mithras is an ancient pagan religion, an underground Luciferian religion. They hate Christianity from the beginning because they think Christians stole their practices. When we talked about the cult of Cybele, which was the predecessor to the cult of Mithras, they had that annual Holy Week in the spring. They did the baptisms, the rebirth with the blood of the bull, which is the Eucharist, the Easter celebration. And one theory is that Mithras hated Christianity so much that they took on the rites of Christianity. That's another theory. And they did it in mockery, which would make sense if you consider the allegations against the Knights Templar, who were alleged to do all these things like spit on the cross and talk trash about Jesus Christ. They would also have, sexy time with each other, the men. Kind of like Crowley added to the levels of initiation in the OTO. The Gnostic Mass, the Satanic Church, they all use the perverted forms of Christianity to mock it. It's almost like Christianity is the biggest dog on the block and these little pups are obsessed with it. They can't leave it alone. Now, Tracy Twyman, she wrote on her website, and you can still read it. I'll put the link in the show notes. The many societies conduct these rituals to open up portals. Okay. She argued that these rituals are powerful enough to rupture the foundations of the earthly plane, opening a doorway to the underworld below, while opening the windows to heaven above. And this is just like we talked about in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1. Jack Parsons, L. Ron Hubbard, and Aleister Crowley channeling the aliens, opening the portals, using the Amalantra workings of John Dee and Edward Kelly, Enochian language. This symbolism is seen on the Masonic and alchemical imagery. When you look at the temple pillars holding up the roof, that is the alchemical invisible mountain. Man seeks to do such a thing so that they can ascend to this false apotheosis. They want to become gods, but opening up the underworld and unleashing the evil spirits needs to be done, because they will do this in exchange for the secrets needed to become like gods, just like the serpent told Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Now, Tracy Twyman, she apparently believed that Crowley, the Knights Templar, and all these others, they practice a thing called the Baptism of Wisdom, named after the Baphomet, because she said the term Baphomet was originally the name of a ritual to invoke the spirit of Metis, which is the Greek goddess of wisdom, which she says was the same goddess as Cybele, the cult of Cybele, which was the predecessor to Mithras. See how it's all coming together here? Probably not. If I drew this out, I would look like that Always Sunny in Philadelphia meme of that guy with the red string. That's what I feel like right now. So she referenced, do you see why this took me so long? Do you see why I kept telling you about I'm going to do this big analysis? Like, this is an insane amount of research and work. And it's still fuzzy to me. There's a lot of pieces here. Now, Tracy, she references an essay by Joseph von Hammer Purgstall called Mysterium Baphometis Revelatum that talks about a Templar phrase called the distinguished charity of Met uproots the enemy. Now, per old von Hammer there, he said that the term distinguished charity was coded language for extreme sex rites involving kids and animals. As per the found artifacts that he's discussing, one of them is Met / Cybele pulling down the sun from the sky with chains. So again, here's just one more piece of that adrenochrome puzzle, pointing to this idea that maybe, just maybe, there is a secret group of folks in this secret cult of Mithras, and they are seeking to do the distinguished charity. And that's what they're messing with all these kids for. Like I was saying, you can go down rabbit holes with all this stuff. Tracy also believed that Mithras represented the original creative act that separated the plane of Earth from the heavens, because he was born from the rock when lightning hit it. And if heaven and earth ever merge again, all that exists will vaporize. Mithras was alleged to have broken past the heavens to the hyper-uranium sun, the source of lightning that got him out of the rock, okay? So a lot of occultists, they worship Mithras for this fact. It's about man becoming God by busting that door down. But guess what? Everyone else has to die for this. A fun fact along my way of research. Tracy also said that Crowley himself called Baphomet Father Mithras. So, there you go. Baphomet is Mithras. This Raised by Wolves show is about the Baphomet religion. Do you think I'm done? I'm not done. We're still going. We're almost done. We're really close. Hang in there. It's going to be worth it. Because you got to stick around to hear the rest of this so that the conclusion makes sense. Okay? The hidden subtext here is that Mithras breaks free from the simulation universe because it's a prison that God made for us to worship him forcibly. And there's these nerds like Elon Musk that want to break free from this world and start these breakaway civilizations. In episode 10 of Raised by Wolves, we're going to see this strange eclipse of planetary bodies of this, like, sun and the moon. This is symbolizing these ideas. They want to bring the cosmos down and break through to the other side. They want to destroy the gods, destroy the planets, and create new ones, creating the new age, the new aeon. Now, another conclusion from all this research, you already know this one, the nerds are going to kill us. They are quite literally funding efforts to break the simulation universe as we speak. They've been drilling it into our heads ever since the Matrix. Oh, this is all just a simulated reality. And, you know, this goes back to Descartes' brain in a vat thing, or what was it, the evil creator or something like that. They've been drilling this in your head because they believe it. And some claim that Elon Musk is part of that. In fact, Twyman, she thought that Musk and Bloomberg might have been. And this all could be tied to CERN as well. They're making black holes. They don't care. These nerds are going to kill us. Twyman was intrigued by contacting all these spirits, like she does in the Clockwork Shavings book, and maybe you're familiar with that. So after she wrote Genuflect, she contacted a spirit called Mithras and asked about all these ideas. Mithras told her, he said, an attempt to break through the top of the universe will result in emerging again from the bottom. If you recall, I spoke about this. There's a Ted Chiang's, it's called Stories of Your Life. I gotta look at my bookshelf. It's called Stories of Your Life. It has a bunch of little mini stories. And one of them is this exact thing. It's about the Tower of Babel and how man ascends to the top. They crack the dome and they're back on the bottom. So Twyman says that Revelation reveals our reality being consumed. The book of Revelation from the Bible reveals that reality will be consumed inside of a box with a lake of fire vaporizing everything outside of it. Now, if, and this is a big if she's referring to Revelation 21, it does in fact talk about the city laid out in a square. But when I look at the Orthodox Study Bible, it says that the New Testament tells us the present world will in fact pass away, but not be utterly destroyed. Instead, it will be renewed. Joy displaces sorrow. God's with his people, restoring paradise. Life is good. Now, Revelation 21:10 talks about how God completes reunion of heaven and earth as the new Jerusalem, which if you listen to the show where I talked to Johnny about the end times, that's kind of some of the ideas that you see floated around. So could this be, this story, Raised by Wolves, when they talk about the Mithraic cults ascending from earth, because they don't really clearly make it obvious why they all left earth. I mean, if they're warring, if there's two factions warring, wouldn't one of them be winning and sticking around? Why are they both leaving? I think the Raised by Wolves is a story about breaking from this world to create the new one. They all leave Earth and head to the cosmos, and we'll understand more why this happens after we get through episodes 5 and 9 on our next podcast. We'll revisit all this in the conclusion, and it'll all make sense. Most likely. I would promise you, but this is very confusing stuff. But yeah, just know that the new world and the true God is what they're trying to make contact with. Hope you'd enjoyed that. Hope that made sense. And if not, that's okay. Stick around, because the next one we're going back to going through the episodes, and then I'll bring it back for why all this matters, why this last 45 minutes of talk mattered. So until next time, my friend, stay woke.